Hey, we're recording, but we just basically talked about your name being Manny. And it's wonderful to see you again. Thanks for coming on Channel 9.
Nice to be here.
And you guys have been doing really interesting work, sort of an evolution of what we already talked about, I think it was a couple of years ago, which MDIL compiling, .NET code to MDIL, getting on, so sort of missing the JITSEP or reducing it. So you guys have been really busy in other things with something called .NET Native.
Yes.
Before we get there, haven't seen Sean in a while. How are you doing, man?
Doing pretty well.
Excellent. So you're a developer.
Yep.
On the .NET team.
.NET theme, working on .NET Native.
Yep. Excellent, man. So Manny, what is .NET Native?
Well, .NET Native is actually it's a new native compilation technology for .NET. So what we're trying to do for .NET Native is essentially bringing the productivity of C# and the performance of C++. So which means managed app developers get to keep all their wonderful features of productivity like edit and continue, but they get the performance of C++ like code. So in a nutshell, that's what .NET Native is.
Excellent. So since this is going to be Channel 9, well, it is Channel 9, what I meant to say is since this is going to be going deep, that's nice.
Yep.
But what exactly does that mean? So no JIT?
Right. So the SDK for .NET Native that we're going to release at build that you can download focuses on static compilation of your .NET code. Mm-hmm. So when you build for .NET Native, you're actually going through the static compilation step, which is using our C++ compiler's backend in order to generate what we're calling MDIL, Machine Dependent IL, similar to what Triton did for the Windows Phone.
Okay.
And then that will get produced into a native binary that is actually just straight up machine code. Right, so there is, when that loads up, you're not loading up a JIT. It's purely static compiled for your app.
Understood. Now, the interesting thing is what .NET developers have gotten used to over the years, and what JITs are really good at, is sort of platform abstraction. So I don't care if it's x64 architecture, I mean, 32-bit, 64-bit, I don't care if it's ARM.
Right.
So now I'm going to.
So when you write your C# code, you still don't care.
How is that?
That abstraction still exists for your application, right? You would still write as if I'm going to run in any specific architecture or no architecture at all if you're writing truly platform independent code. Mm-hmm. When you build, of course, you're going to have to build for the target architecture.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, so you will have a build step per architecture that you'll deploy to. So if you're targeting AMD 64 and ARM, you have to build both an AMD 64 package and an ARM package instead of just an MSIL package. Mm-hmm. But when you're writing your code, that should be abstracted away from you. You don't have to change what you're doing at the keyboard.
Excellent.
So in some sense, it's very similar to the Windows Phone 8 story, in the sense most of the developers are just going to be working with C# and MSIL, and they're going to be running their tests there, debugging there, etc. Now, when it comes to the profiling step, if you recall, for Windows Phone 8, only when you're actually deploying to the device, the MDIL step gets invoked, and you get the MDIL binaries that go on device, and then the native images execute. So this is conceptually quite similar there. It's an optimization step. So for the most part, developers write platform agnostic code, they test it, debug it, make sure it's all working. When they're actually ready to profile and run more tests on the actual device, at that point they have to attach a device that's architecture specific, and the tool chain, basically the add-in in VS, will basically get them through.
Great. And so the wonderful thing about the C++ backend is you get excellent machine optimizations. Amazing. Especially for when we're living in the world of Haswell, which is actually challenging for those guys. And Eric Brumer will be, people have already probably watched his talk at Build, we're pretending like, of course, we're not having this conversation now, but people get it. So the point is, that's a beautiful thing. So you sort of, this one Microsoft thing, this one backend compiler is rock and roll.
Right.
It's a wonderful piece of technology. So that's great. So I'm still, I kind of want to dig into the no JIT, little bit of JIT, what kind of JIT are we talking about? Because, you have the JITs can be useful. So what exactly are you doing in terms of JITting? So runtime compilation.
So to be clear, so it's not so much centered around the Node.js .NET Native. So .NET Native, essentially, just to give a little more background, there's lots of things that we did in order to actually get this performance. So just to give a little more context on it, so we get up to about 60% performance wins on top store apps. On average, we see about 40% startup wins, and this is compared to NGINT or Triton scenarios. So the JIT, there's not much JIT compilation even in NGINT or Triton, but we get about 40% wins over that. So some of the work that we did here is, you know, we optimized the CLR runtime. We have something called MRT100.dll, which is, you know, the minimal runtime, which is an optimized CLR. We optimize that for static compilation. Static compilation, as Sean talked about earlier, that's another thing that allows you to do global analysis and global optimizations. We are refactored and optimized the libraries. So the .NET Framework libraries are refactored and again optimized to make sure that your store app runs faster. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that we did under the covers. So, and of course, we have the C++ optimizer generating code.
So there's a lot of .NET code in the real world that doesn't run on WinRT. And so if I'm a developer and I'm managing a performance critical desktop app, I can still use this technology. Yes?
So today we are focused on building it for the store apps. But having said that, you know, desktop apps are an important part of the strategy. So we are still evolving that story and we are still going to evolve and improve native compilation for that part of the story.
Okay, understood. And so, I mean, That's clear. So this is a technology specifically for, you know, modern Windows apps running in on the WinRT environment, meaning the runtime, the infrastructure, as part of Windows 8.
For now. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. And you also mentioned startup time, which has also always been such a problem, especially when you guys used WPF as your UI for Visual Studio. You know, you had to do a ton of work to optimize startup time, right? That was the big thing developers were seeing, lag in startup time. We see that all the time in .NET applications in general.
Sure.
For store apps, it's just unacceptable, mm-hmm. right? They have to start quickly.
Right.
So take me through what happens when I press F5 in this world. I mean, I'd love to see what you guys are actually doing.
So there's an interesting thing we could point out. When you press F5, you're still going to run against its traditional CLR. Your debugging experience is the same debugging experience you've always had. And part of that is, when you're pressing F5, you're sort of incrementally developing your app. You might get a bug, you want to quickly fix it, have the edit and continue experience. Mm-hmm. You don't want to pay the cost of going through a whole native compile just to quickly find, I missed a if check over here and I want to change that and then recompile it. So
sure.
when you hit F5, actually, it's going to be the same as it always was. Now, once you hit, you know, let's say Shift F5, but you're not going to debug, you're going to deploy, or F6, right? Depending upon your keyboard mappings. But when you've decided that this is a good version of the app, I want to test it with .NET Native enabled, you'll run through the .NET Native toolchain. You'll get your binary output on the other side. Mm-hmm. The startup path for all these Windows Store apps starts with Windows. You know, you have the WinRT startup process that will then call into the application code. Mm-hmm. A traditional .NET Windows Store app that would, of course, load the CLR, that would load MS Core Lib, that would load your assembly. Since you've just deployed it, it has not yet been auto-engined, so you're going to have to JIT, you know, the components of your assembly that have your main library. Mm-hmm. Here, what's going to happen is we're going to load up your native .exe that does have a dependency on MRT100 app DLL, which Monty referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. That DLL is actually, you know, compared to the CLR, it's actually only a couple hundred K. It's not huge in the amount of megabytes. We also currently have this optimization where we will analyze the full transitive closure dependencies your application has. So rather than having a dependency on MS Core Lib to pull in, let's say, system.object that you might need, or string, or these sorts of things, that code is actually going to be in your application DLL in this preview SDK. Mm-hmm. So what this means is your application fires up, it loads up a very small runtime, and it jumps right into your application code. There's no paging in of all these other binaries, the working set is much smaller, and your code is running, because there's no JIT step there either.
Sure. Now, there, of course, is a garbage collector. This is managed code we're talking about. What optimizations were made to the garbage collector to support this? Anything?
The garbage collector, actually, interestingly enough, is the CLR garbage collector. It's literally the same code.
Beautiful.
So we didn't throw away the CLR, right? We've just evolved and factored the CLR, and one of the key pieces is that garbage collector, which we tune heavily, right? We've got years and years of work on performance optimizations on that GC. Mm-hmm. We want that to apply here as well.
Great.
So you still get things like background GC.
Great.
That's still there.
Well, and also I don't have to, and .NET developers don't have to think about allocating and deallocating memory.
Exactly.
Right. Which is what they're used to doing.
Exactly.
So that's a wonderful thing. I mean, even the C++ guys in the WinRT world are just using smart pointers, right? Which is reference counted, form of garbage collection. Now, this is interesting to me. When we talk about specific advancements in performance, we've already covered the obvious one, which is startup time, because you don't have to compile again. What else?
So, you know, we covered startup time, memory. Memory is about 15% lower with .NET Native apps compared to Engine or Triton apps.
Nice.
So, again, with memory, same thing applies. Like, since right now, you know, in the preview, we have optimized and refactored the libraries, and we are pulling them in statically. That allows us to actually make a lot of calls on, oh, is this code really used? Do we need to pull this code in? Not really, so we can keep that aside. Then in terms of runtime performance, it's a C++ optimizer. So eventually, every optimization that's there in the C++ compiler will make its way in here.
Excellent. So now in the C++ world, the C++ optimizer, the backend compiler, gets an intermediate form of you know, what your C++ front-end code was. What intermediate form are you giving it? So they obviously had to make changes to support you, right?
Yeah. So in this particular case, what we're doing is we are giving the C++ optimizer essentially MSIL. And what the optimizer does, it actually produces MDIL.
Very nice.
So,
right on. So Jim Radigan and his team of brilliant bandits. Okay, that's excellent. Very nice. So this is going deep. I'd like to draw pictures. You need to draw pictures on the board. It's sort of a requirement. Otherwise, I get yelled at.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair. So I'd love to have sort of a picture of what, you know, what goes on exactly and what changes you had to make. You guys know what you're doing. So let's get on the board and rock and roll. Do you want to come to this one?
So the .NET Native SDK has what we'll call the native code tool chain that your program runs through in order to create the native code at the end. And we sort of alluded to a few steps along the way here, but we can sort of draw the whole thing out.
Great.
So at the beginning, you know, you have your C# code that you do what you would always do with, right? You pass this through to CSC, and out comes IL. Let's call this app.cs. And produce app.exe. Exactly the same as you always have. There's no changes to the C# compiler, and there's no changes into this IL output. This can run on the desktop CLR, which is what we were saying before. When you hit F5, this is exactly what would be running. But now let's say you want to go through through .NET Native. and now we've each had our one slip up.
That's great. Okay, everybody, Project N is what it was called internally. Big deal.
Yep. So now you want to go through the IL toolchain. So there's several steps here. The first thing we do is we pass it to ilc.exe, which is the compiler that sort of orchestrates the whole set of transforms that are going to happen. Right? So this comes through to ilc. And ilc takes as input the application, but also the .NET Native framework implementation as well. This is what we're alluding to, where ilc can see the entire program. Everything that might execute at runtime, it's got a view on to allow it to do optimizations.
Excellent.
Right. So we'll call this CoreFX. It's important to note that this is a different implementation of the framework, but it is the same framework. So we're not adding new APIs. We're not all APIs are currently supported, but by the time we finish this project, the aim is that this is basically just a new implementation of the same API set that you would code against. So your C# code should not change just because you're using a different, you know, non-MS Corelib implementation of the framework.
Okay. And I think people are used to that with the WinRT world anyway.
Yeah.
Because it is an optimized framework for
WinRT.
Exactly.
Yep. All right, so ILC has a bunch of steps, right? One of the first things it's going to do is it's going to go ahead and it's going to say, all right, what all does this application need to do talking to WinRT? Right? WinRT is interesting in that that's on the traditional .NET route, you would have code to talk to native code generated for you at runtime. Now, if we want to generate all that statically, we don't want to use the runtime to do these sorts of things. Right? And this is both part of static compilation and as part of the refactoring Monty was referring to. Layering-wise, it's a little strange that the lowest layer of the system, the runtime, has knowledge of, you know, the XAML stack, which is one of the highest layers of the system, in order to do, you know, native interaction. So what we want to do is we want to abstract that out of the low layer, put it up into a much higher layer, which is actually inside of ILC.
Interesting.
So one of the things this is going to do is this is actually going to look at all of the WinRT and P invokes that you do in your application and generate C# code that calls those directly, right? We call this MCG for Marshall and Code Generation. This will produce a .g.cs file that everyone's used to seeing, similar to the XAML compiler, which goes to CSC again and comes back into the toolchain. So what you'll see in this file, now it's machine generated C sharp and it's doing low level stuff, so it's not, you know, your prettiest C sharp in the world. But if you're really interested in how, for instance, you know, that string I passed to XAML ends up getting displayed, you'll see in here we do things, we pin the string, we create the native H string object from it, and we pass it through to the native, you know, function pointer.
Sure.
And so all that's getting done statically, we don't need to have any special runtime knowledge.
Great.
All of this now goes through a series of IL transforms. These IL transforms serve to take the IL that you would run against the desktop CLR and put it into a form that's a little more .NET native friendly, right? So one example of this is in traditional .NET, delegates exist as a class and they have, you know, their invoke method, which has no implementation at all. And the CLR at runtime fills in that implementation. Again, static, we don't want to be doing that. So we have an IL transform that says you have a delegate type, let me create an invoke method for it.
Okay.
As one example. We have, in traditional CLR, you have as many, you know, multi-dimensional arrays as you want. We generate types on the fly for that. Here we have a single dimensional array for optimization purposes, but if you use, for instance, a three-dimensional array to represent a matrix, we have a transform that converts that into talking in terms of a single dimensional array, just okay. For another example. And there's a series of these that will happen. The result of this is going to be one, you know, internally we basically end up with one assembly, which, you know, we'll call, you know, app.ildll. That contains everything, the framework, the interop code. Similar to interop, serialization has a step, sg.exe, where they generate C-sharp code to do all serialization you need on the fly, and that's pulled in here.
Okay.
This is now the world. And obviously, most apps don't use the world. So the next optimization step is that we pass this to a tree shaker. And what the tree shaker does is it looks at, you know, the entry point of your application, and it starts figuring out what you actually use and throwing away parts of the world that you don't use, right? And when it does that, it also enables us to do other optimizations. For instance, if you have a virtual function that's only ever implemented by one class, well, then those don't have to be virtual calls. They can be straight calls to the other class, right? I didn't make my box big enough here.
That's fine.
But so we have a tree shaking step down here.
So really, I mean, it looks like it's .NET optimizations evolved.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right? That's what this is all about.
Exactly. And so all this is doing, you know, every step of the way, you'll notice, is just taking IL and it's just putting it into different forms.
Great.
But it's still, you know, you can crack the result of this thing with ildasm. It's not going to run real well on the CLR because we've done things on it that, you know, for instance, the delegate thing I was talking about, the CLR doesn't expect you to have an invoke method, so it's not going to be happy. But it is all valid IL, all valid ECMA metadata, so you can reason about it anyway. You know, if you're really interested in diving in, you can see exactly what happened.
Right.
The result of this is the IL that Mani mentioned is going to go into the C++ backend. Okay. So the next step here is we take this ILDLL, and that goes into ILC orchestrates this whole thing. So we'll pretend that this box just keeps extending into the UTC backend of the C++ compiler.
Okay.
We're calling this, you know, if you see the process pop up on your process explorer, you'll see nutc driver.exe, and that's what this is.
You paying attention, Felix, out there? I know you've been trying to work backwards on leaked builds. Felix is one of our
designers
who's very, he's like the Mary Jo Foley, but he's really technical.
Yes.
Okay.
So nutc driver is going to produce MDIL, similar to, you know, what we did for the phone. Maybe I'll try to work my way back now. So now you have app.mdil. This, of course, is pretty close to being able to run, but it's not quite all the way there. So again, similar to what we did for the phone, and this is really just the next evolution of that technology, is you need a binder step, right? So now this comes into rhbind, which is the binder. And out of rhbind, logically comes at native code, which you would think would be app.exe. Interestingly enough, what you'll find is app.exe does come out, and app.exe is about, you know, 10K.
Okay.
App.dll also comes out, and that's where all your code is, in app.dll. App.dll exposes effectively an export called main, and app.exe just calls into app.dll's main. And the reason for this is that, obviously, in Windows Store apps, you can write WinRT components in managed code, and those need to be able to load up as DLL. Right? Or you can write apps, which needs to be able to load up as an .exe. So this allows, without duplicating the code, your code to be used both ways. If it needs to load as a DLL, well, then you just load the DLL directly. If it needs to be an .exe, well, then the .exe just shims over to the DLL.
Makes sense.
Yep.
And you could also write controls in C++.
Exactly.
But the question would be, if in fact, you know, you're using the same backend optimizer C++, but the thing is, if I wanted to write a C++ component to really blast through hardcore computation, I could still do that.
Yes.
And it just fits naturally into this model.
Yes. If you did that, this MCG step here would notice you're using C++ code, and it would generate some C# to call into that C++ code.
Excellent.
Okay.
All of it being native, of course, at runtime.
At runtime, yes. Yes, because that happens, you know, you see very early, and then all the rest applies to it as if it was part of your application.
Cool.
Yep. So then, you know, this .exe and .dll would become part of your application package, and you're off to the races.
Cool. We ship it up to the happy cloud, and then it comes down to customers.
So actually, you know, so the app developers, what they're going to ship up to the happy cloud is essentially this one. Just like in the Windows Phone world, they ship the app MSIL to the cloud. All this will happen in the cloud, and when a user downloads an app, he or she will actually get the package which has the native code. So if I'm an ARM device, I get an ARM executable. If I'm on an X64 device, I get an X64 executable.
So, excellent. Now, I want to step back. Now, if I'm a Windows Store developer, which I'm just a Windows developer writing app, I can get all of this compilation done for me in the cloud and not locally in Visual Studio, if I so desire. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So you could get it done, everything in the cloud, but as a developer, you would probably want to test it on your devices.
Of course.
So we have provided the Visual Studio add-in, which basically allows you to test it on your devices. But the compilation will happen in the cloud, so which means that whenever we have compiler innovations and we have an updated version with, say, modern optimizations, developers get it.
It makes sense. And then also, you know, I could just upload all of my, essentially, IL to you.
Yes.
And you can deal with producing the ARM package and the 64-bit stuff and whatever, you know, the x86.
Yes.
Because ARM is actually quite challenging. In some sense, because you know the optimizations you do for ARM are different than the optimizations you do for x86.
Yes.
So the wonderful backend C++ backend compiler deals with that for us.
Yes.
But anyway, this is wonderful. So you know, did you run into any issues with you know, locally compiling for ARM? I'm just curious. I mean, what were some of the because you sort of abstracted the back-end part of it to an established technology that had been modified itself to deal with WinRT world, you probably didn't get a lot of insight into that, but I'm sure you probably did, being a dev building this.
So talk
to me a little bit about that story.
We had bugs, you know, as you do when you build a new platform, but sort of what you were saying is the UTC backend of the C++ compiler was already producing ARM code, you know, for a while now. So this wasn't really a brand new platform bring up, right? They knew how to generate ARM code. So we got to, thankfully, short circuit a lot of the initial pain you typically get when you're starting the platform brand new, as we were just reusing that existing code.
And I'm sort of picking on ARM because I would argue that if you look at the devices in the real world, including one that we make.
Yes.
ARM is the weakest link in the chain when it comes to compute. Yes, better battery life.
Yes.
No, not as fast as x86, period.
And so that actually is the reason why ARM was the first architecture we targeted with this.
Great. And so what are the how's it doing on ARM, man? How's it going?
It's doing pretty well. So as of Windows 8.1, we released a couple of apps on this technology on your Surface devices. So you have FreshPane and Vitamint. So when you download it on your Surface right now, it actually runs with this technology.
Excellent.
And you're seeing about 40% wins in startup.
Okay. Now, there's also another chip out there that's x86-y, which is Atom, which quite frankly, early on, that was not a very good experience running our apps. How's it doing in that world? Like, how has that improved?
So, you know, so currently at Build, the preview is going to be for ARM and x64, but you know, it's a preview, but we are working on x86, and the performance numbers that we're seeing pretty much, you know, it's not changing much. It's actually consistently we see about 30 to 40% wins. So when x86 comes to the party, you kind of will see some wins.
Excellent. And so, I mean, I think this is probably pretty clear to what's going on here. I mean, you guys have done a lot of work. How, by the way, is the Windows Phone compiler doing? And what are we seeing in the real world?
Oh, the MDIL compiler, yeah. That's been, you know, everything's gone peach-shaped there. So
great.
People are very happy, and actually, you know, one of the instances that I like to point out is somebody actually had a splash screen in mm-hmm. Windows Phone 7. It was a Windows Phone 7 app. They had a splash screen because the app was taking a couple more seconds to load up. Mm-hmm. With Triton and Windows Phone 8, what they actually saw is the splash screen was blocking the app because the app has already started up in the background.
Right on, man. That's great.
It's a good problem to have.
That's a wonderful problem to have. And I think, you know, it's nice to see this level of evolution and this nice working together of traditionally, you know, disparate philosophies of programming. Managed on the one side, native on the other. But it's always been native at execution after JIT. I mean, machines don't understand anything else. So I'm also sensing that you guys have done a lot of work in terms of optimization outside of the context of passing a blob to the backend compiler, C++ backend compiler, to do its further optimizations. It's clear that .NET is just being further and further and further optimized, which ultimately will be a great thing for desktop, ASP.NET, right? Things that run services and Azure.
Yeah.
So that's all really exciting. So what's next? By the way, I mean, the moral of the story is people who are watching this before you two guys are live on Channel 9 Live.
Yep.
So people watching this, think up some questions and give us a little sort of what's coming up. Like, what are you guys thinking about?
So in this particular, you know, this design that Sean described is essentially the state of the world as it is today. So we are constantly looking at this and going, how can we actually improve this? So for example, you know, we have incubations that are actually looking at, you know, can we actually have, you know, shared assemblies even with this setup is something we are actually looking at.
Mm.
So, you know, maybe we can eke out more wins that way. So it's premature right now. We are just studying that. Mm. But essentially, we are looking at all these steps and seeing what can we do better.
Mm.
What can we do better in terms of size, in terms of working set, in terms of startup, and even in terms of tool chain throughput. So, as a point, people when they actually download the add-in and they install it, they'll find that the compilation times when you actually deploy to device is longer than C# MSIL, because C# MSIL is just JIT compiling, whereas we are actually doing all these heavy optimizations on it.
C# stops there.
We do all that.
I mean, that's actually a wonderful point, because when you spend a lot of time in Visual Studio and with managed code over the years, you've gotten used to, boom, right? Like super fast compilation.
That is, again, one of the main reasons that we want to make sure that your F5 debug experience is that boom experience, because you don't want to wait between when you fix that bug and you test it and then you find the next bug and fix mm-hmm. the next one. It's just a more productive experience.
Sure. I mean, the other thing I would ask is, you know, you're bringing optimization closer to .NET. I mean, to .NET developers.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of change in behavior? I mean, everybody, all developers should always measure. It's not like there's a silver bullet that's going to be across all scenarios, wonderfully optimized code. Everybody has to measure.
Yep.
Whether it's C++, whatever. So talk to me a little bit about that.
So changes in behavior, of course, there are some here. A lot of them, so our goal is that every Windows Store app can run against this. It's a developer preview, so we do have some areas where we know that we're not yet there. Mm-hmm. We have some areas where we may not know. There may be some bugs still hiding around. As Monty said, we've been refactoring both the framework and the runtime, and that has just by its very nature the ability to introduce subtle changes in behavior.
Okay.
Not to mention a whole new backend for the code generation. So
We have a couple of ways to approach this. One of which is for the things that we know about. We know, okay, the traditional .NET application would behave this way. We haven't yet gotten around to making sure that .NET native applications have the same behavior. We have a static analysis tool that will run, that will look at your application and flag instances of things. For one example, the multi-dimensional arrays I mentioned earlier, we support up to 4 dimensions right now. You can, on traditional .NET applications, you know, go wacky and have a 25-dimensional array if you want. This will flag that and say, okay, right now, up to 4 dimensions are available. These are all things we're looking to address as we move forward. It's just being a developer preview that we're releasing right now. For things that are behaving differently and you haven't gotten a warning from the static analysis tool, we would actually ask that you go to the forums and give us feedback, because it may be just a bug that we don't know about yet, or something that we can prioritize to help make sure that your app gets unblocked.
Great.
That static analysis tool I talked about, it's will run when you enable your project for .NET Native. So when you install the VS add-in, one option that's going to happen is on your project, you can right-click it, and there'll be a new option that says Enable for .NET Native. When you click that, it's going to do several things, but one of those things it will do is it will run the static analysis on your project as it is right then, mm-hmm. and pop up an HTML report in Visual Studio saying these are the things that we found that right now are not currently enabled, but okay. You may want to work around that in order to get your app working right now.
Excellent. So my favorite tool mm-hmm. for static analysis in Visual Studio is Sharper.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I love JetBrains. I think those guys do amazing work. Mm-hmm. So they're a very important partner. You know, they dedicated a lot of IQ and time to Visual yep. Studio, extending the capability of Visual Studio. How is this going to impact those guys?
Not at all, because you have the same
F5 experience.
Yes. It doesn't.
And yeah. doesn't at all.
Doesn't at all. It should just work as everything else.
Beautiful. So the tool you're talking about, the static analysis tool, yep. is one you can use as part of helping you better
yes.
understand
exactly.
how your extension is being yeah. used and not used
yes.
or abused.
Yep. And so Visual Studio will actually leave a menu option on the right click for the project that will let you rerun that tool anytime you want in case you've made substantial changes to your project and you want to check again,
mm-hmm.
Which will be, of course, static analysis will see sort of the whole program instead of just parts that you're executing,
mm-hmm.
and it's a little bit faster to run that than to go through the whole tool chain and then try out your program again.
Amazing, man. Whole program optimizations for,
yeah.
for .NET.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you of us will have one question, so I'm going to
yeah.
answer that.
Oh,
okay.
Felix, here you go, man.
So the question is, this is all statically compiled. How are we handling dynamic scenarios? So what about things like...
Yeah, reflection is not allowed
exactly.
in .NET and Windows Store app.
So...
Yeah.
So, how do we handle things like ref.emit is not allowed, but there are cases which do use reflection, and how are those handled?
Yes.
So the thing that I would like to point out is, among all these transforms that Sean described,
yeah.
the cool thing is we also add in heuristics that basically detects what your app is actually using. So even without, for a lot of developers, even without they actually doing anything, their apps will just run. Because the compiler actually has heuristics. By the compiler, I mean ILC.exe.
Mm-hmm.
It has heuristics built in that kind of predicts, okay, these are the things that you need to reflect on. So we will actually keep those types and methods in, even if you're not referencing them directly in your code.
Great. So for example, and I haven't tried this myself, so you might look at me and go, well, no. But I mean, the dynamic keyword
yes.
in C# still exists,
yes.
and that's based on reflection
yeah.
under the covers, right?
That's right.
So, and I can use that in a Windows Store app.
Yep.
It's actually not a bad idea to do things dynamically. Or you're obviously doing a lot of stuff in the background, but that's orthogonal to dynamic. So, what you're saying is you see CSC.exe spots the dynamic keyword. That information gets passed on down to your optimization chain. And you guys do smart things to figure out, well, we're going to have to JIT here. But what do you do? Let's say I do use that dynamic keyword. So it's in my code, and I'm actually using it.
Yes.
What exactly do you do?
So in this particular case, what Sean was saying is, this actually takes in everything and creates the app.dll that's pretty much the world, right?
Okay.
So. At that point, we have information on what is it that you're going to be using? What type is that actually resolving to? So we can actually do those kinds of tricks in order to actually deduce this is the type that we need to keep so that you can run at runtime.
Mm.
So for the most part, we expect developers, nothing changes. It just works.
And so when I use object, like there are people who will do that, just like in Objective-C, there are people who are going to use the syntax, you know, to just, this is a generic object, I'm going to dynamically mess with it at runtime. In this case, I have an object, whether it's dynamic, I'm using a dynamic keyword or not, I'm actually not going to know until runtime what it is, because maybe I'm making a call into something else, something from the cloud. So that's really just a lead into the question is, when I need to JIT, I JIT.
No, you don't JIT.
So how do you know that what type that's going to be at compile time?
So we predict.
So
we predict and we kind of, we basically decide, okay, these are the types that you might need. Mm-hmm. And so we keep that around. So the tree shaker actually keeps those types around because we know that, okay, these are the types that are potentially needed at runtime. So we keep it around even though there's no direct reference, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so things generally work. Now, this is a preview release, all said and done. So there are cases where developers might have to actually give us some hints at some point.
Great.
But that's more an attribute of this being a preview rather than anything else.
Yeah, I like the notion of hinting in general. It's something that could be very useful.
The hinting notion, actually, it's sort of a general concept baked in here. I didn't draw it on here, but there's a, in your app package, one of the things which is going to happen when you say enable for .NET Native mm-hmm. is we're going to produce a file default.rd.xml. And these rd.xml files, these are the hints that we're talking about. And they get fed into the tool chain along with the app.exe. And this is the piece that gives us the information about what hints you need to give us. Mm-hmm. Now, our goal is, as an application developer, you don't have to touch this thing, right? Like, we don't want you to have to think about that. .NET should just work as it always has for you. If you're using Dynamic for productivity gains, by all means, we don't want you to stop doing it just because we want to apply some optimizations. Mm-hmm. It's a preview release. We're not all the way there.
Understood.
Now, one of the things we have found out, which is pretty interesting, is that you get this dichotomy where you can have a library you're using, which is just say a JSON serializer, which knows it's going to reflect on a bunch of properties of a type. And you have an application which says, I'm going to use this JSON serializer, I'm going to pass it my type. Neither side of that contract knows both pieces. The JSON serializer knows what it needs to reflect on, the application knows what type will be reflected on. So what we've actually produced, and you'll be able to see in this build, is you can put one of these RDXMLs not with only with the application, but also with your library. So if you're writing that serializer, you can say things like, if somebody calls my serialize of t method, make sure that that t that they call it with is reflectable.
Excellent.
Now as the application developer, I don't have to do anything as long as my library author has supplied me to supply the hint for me, right? Which is what we're hoping, you know, as these hints are necessary, they can be done in a sort of reusable way so that app authors generally don't have to think about them.
Great. And so there, I can think of a group of library developers in this building
yep.
That have probably done that.
Yeah. So we have, there is a hint file that comes with the runtime. And it will say exactly that sort of thing.
Awesome, man. And so for low-level kind of stuff like iterators and blah, 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 and algorithms around, you know, yep. that people can use that are part of the BCL. You know, were there changes there to support this model to further, like, did the code itself, you know, you had to do a little refactoring and sort of optimizing at the code level, obviously.
Yeah. So what we did do is, like, what we did find is a lot of the reflection actually did happen in the framework as well. So when we refactored and optimized these libraries, we made sure that, you know, we kind of cut them a little card there and removed the reflection users widely within the framework.
Excellent. So as far as the developer is concerned, it's still reflection. It's just that it happens to get compiled away. And you guys figure out what it actually is at compile time.
Yes.
And that's probably not rocket science for, well, it is. Don't get me wrong. It's probably not, it's probably going to cover a large swath of the cases of people who actually use reflection in reality.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Exactly.
Right on. Hey, man, it's always great to talk to you. Going to be fun to have you on Channel 9 Live. Both Sean and Manny will be there. Felix, I expect you to be there.
I won't be there. But
you won't
Habib
be there?
Will be there. Yep.
Who will be there?
My GPM, Habib.
Ah, Habib will be there, right on. So we know that Habib is capable as well. But so it's great that we got to meet you.
Yeah.
Put you on the camera, being the program manager behind this, right? And of course, the developer, Sean. Right on, guys. See you at Build.
See you at Build.
And we'll talk again soon, because I really want to know how this continues to evolve.
Definitely.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.